from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
As we head out to the WadeFord.com hotline, Chris Thomas with you for about another 2 hours here until Atlanta United pregame comes your way then, with Garrett Chapman and Joe Patrick sitting in for the vacationing Abe Gordon. Let's welcome in our buddy Jason Longshore. Follow him on Twitter at Longshoe. Jason, how is lovely Montreal treating you this afternoon?
The weather is extremely lovely, like 75, 80 degrees all day. It's been wonderful.
Yeah, I'm very jealous, because it's about 25 degrees warmer than that right now in the heart of Atlanta, and very, very soupy.
I'll be getting it tomorrow. Don't you worry.
Yeah, very, very soupy as well. All right, before we get into United, a couple of international soccer stories I want to touch base with you on. First of all, explain to our audience who may have missed it, what the heck happened in Charlotte with a brawl that ended in some fans and players actually throwing some punches?
Yeah, it's complicated, because as anything with CONMEBOL and South American soccer, you're going to get probably four different stories, and then none of them are actually going to be completely factual. So I think we're all still trying to piece together what happened. It was after the Colombia-Uruguay Copa America semifinal in Charlotte. Game had a lot of friction to it anyway, and Colombia ends up winning. The Uruguayan family members, and I don't know how this was organized, how they were seated in the section, how that was chosen, how security should have been handled for them. I think it's obvious there wasn't enough security around them. And Colombian fans, after the win, taunting. I've seen some videos of Colombian fans like basically trying to start something with people. And stuff kicked off. Like, I don't know if family members were actually jumped, but if you're a player and you see your family members, and some of these were wives and small kids, and you see them in and near that area, you're going to react. And I do agree with Marcelo Bielsa in that I think the threats from CONMEBOL about suspending players and doing this and doing that are not exactly fair, because the players have to defend their family members. So until we know more, it's hard to say exactly what went down. I do somewhat understand the players' reaction. Did they maybe take it too far? Possibly, but we don't know what they actually saw. I have serious questions about how security was handled in the stadium. And is that a stadium thing? Is that a CONMEBOL thing? Is it somewhere in between? I don't know if we're actually going to get the answers, but it looked really bad. And luckily, I don't think anyone was seriously injured.
For more fallout of that tournament, obviously where the U.S. national team stands now, Jason, what's the latest on the search for a replacement for Greg Berhalter? I know a couple of high-profile guys said no thank you.
Yeah, Jesse Marsh saying no thank you, that's performance art from Jesse, because if you'd paid attention to what he had to say when he was a media member before he took the Canada job, it was very clear that he was not happy that he was not chosen to get the U.S. job when Greg Berhalter was rehired. And to the point that it almost seemed like he was using his position to undermine Berhalter a little bit. Now, the results ultimately are what undermined Berhalter. But that was an opportunity for Jesse Marsh to maybe stick the knife in a little bit into that whole situation. So push that one to the side. That one wasn't going to happen. Jurgen Klopp wasn't going to happen either. And I think some folks tried to create stories there where there wasn't one. This is a guy who had a dream job and became an absolute local legend in Liverpool with what he did in that town. And the job got to be too much for him. He needed a break. You know, the all-consuming nature of a club job, it wears you out. And Pep Guardiola talked about it. Jurgen Klopp talked about it when he decided to step down. He's not going to all of a sudden feel refreshed to take this job in a country he's never worked in, has no real tie to other than some Instagram posts about enjoying his visits. You know, like people tried to take that and say that it meant something when, no, it was just a nice post on July 4th. That's what it was. So now you have to get into the real situation. Who are you going to go after? Who makes sense? Who is realistic? And you need to get it done before the September window. You want to get somebody in place as soon as possible. Can you go with an interim in those games? Sure, you could. You don't want to. They need to make progress, and they need to get out in front of this, and I hope U.S. Soccer can do that sooner rather than later.
We're talking to our buddy Jason Longshore here, going all across the globe with some international soccer stories, and we're going to get to Atlanta United here in just a second. What do you feel like is the best move for the national team to make while they're looking for a coach? Is it a change in style? Is it a change in roster personnel for the next cycle? What do you think this team is going to do in order to try to maximize its ranking as whatever they are, 15 or 20 in the world, and try to live up to that?
Yeah, that's the thing about a national team, is you kind of are what you are. You know, like, you're not going to go out and recruit a large number of dual nationals that are not representing you currently. So can you change out some personnel? Sure. Is it going to make a dramatic difference? No, not really. I mean, it's not like there's some great player that would be world-class that is out there that's not in the team. And ultimately, that's what it comes down to. You have one world-class player in Christian Pulisic. You have some other very, very good players, and your overall talent pool is deeper and wider than it's ever been. But at the top end, the guys who decide games, you've got one. And Pulisic, I think, has lived up to his end of everything. Others are not quite at that level. And I'm glad you mentioned it. Like, being 15, 20 in the world, whatever ranking system you want to look at, you know, they are what they are. Can they go into a tournament like the World Cup in 26 at home and punch above their weight? Absolutely. But that's what the conversation has to be. Not about, well, this is a team that should beat Uruguay 9 times out of 10. No, they shouldn't. No, they shouldn't. I mean, who was number 20 in the AP poll last year in college football? Like, NC State, maybe? I know they were around there. Would you expect NC State to go in and beat Alabama 9 times out of 10?
No.
No. It's not going to happen. But for some reason in soccer, we're thinking that the number 20 team or so, give or take, you know, on a good day, they could be 15. On a bad day, they could be 25. That they should beat somebody consistently. There are levels to this. So you have to understand that. I think what U.S. soccer has to go do is get that coach who can go and take a lesser team and make them better in those moments. That's going to be some tactics. That's going to be some man management. Who is good at making an underdog run? That's what they need to be looking for. And I hope that's what the conversation will turn to eventually. Long term, we want to develop better players, so we're not 20. We're 10. We're 8. But you do that through the players you have. The coach is not going to make a dramatic difference over a long span of time, but in a tournament, yeah, you can go on a run. Get somebody who can do that.
Based off of what you just said, and also based on the fact that a lot of U.S. national team men and women's fans are bandwagon fans, meaning they hop on, hop off for big events, big tournaments, World Cup, etc., does the success recently of the women's national team skew what the general public thinks the men's team should be?
That's a good question. I don't think so. I think, honestly, what you're going to get into on the women's side is that the recent success skews what they think the current success should be on the women's side, because there the talent gap is gone in terms of the U.S. just having the most talent, no question. That's not true anymore. So it's a, you know, it's a roll of the dice between 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in the world, Spain, Netherlands, England, Germany, U.S., Canada is real close. Like, it's very close between all of them. On the men's side, I don't know if that necessarily affects it. I do think there is a little bit of a, I don't know if it's just unfair expectations to having a few more players in Europe than we're accustomed to. And, you know, I don't know if it's just maybe an unfair set of expectations that fans are putting on this team and these players. This is a good team. This is a team that should be dominant in CONCACAF. This is a team that is probably fifth or sixth in this hemisphere. Ecuador would be a very similar kind of team. Argentina, Colombia, Brazil, Uruguay, all ahead of the U.S. in this hemisphere. In Europe, there's quite a few teams that are ahead. That's not a horrible thing. We've got to work long-term to be better than that, but at times people don't understand what the real expectation is. I don't know if it's just an arrogance about the American way, or, you know, you get a couple more players playing at good clubs in Europe and that should dramatically change everything. Down to the overall level of talent, and there are far, I mean, there's 15, 18, 20 teams that have more talent than the U.S. right now.
All right, when it comes to Atlanta United, let's take a collective deep breath. They've made a lot of moves over the last couple of weeks, played some really disappointing matches. In your opinion, where does this club stand overall right now?
Kind of the same thread of our conversation here about talent, right? When you lose Giakoumakis and Almada from this group, and now Wiley from this group, at least for the Olympics and possibly for good after that, those are three very talented players that you don't have anymore. So you've got to go replace them. And until the window opens, you can't do that. So that's number one. And then two, you got to get those replacements right. So this is not as talented of a team as it was at the beginning of the season. And the expectations change because of that. I think the first half in Real Salt Lake last Saturday was really impressive for what this group can be. I thought Rob Valentino did an amazing job with a very short week. Remember, they were in New England on the Wednesday, played, had a light training session on Friday, and had a very good game plan to go up against one of the best attacking teams in the league. And the first 45 was extremely good. You conceded first, got beat in a 1v1, and RSL opened you up. That's what they do. Responded, leveled the game, were by far the better team in the first half. Second half was starting to tilt away from you, but where it changed was individual mistakes on set pieces, not from the run of play, not from the overall play. RSL is that good of a team. They can find a way to hurt you, and they did in this game. But that first 45, I think, gives you some glimpses that this group can be a good collective. They can't afford to make mistakes, though. And that's what happened against Indy on Tuesday in Open Cup. The margin is far thinner than it used to be because you don't have as much talent. You can get it done as a group, as a collective unit, but you've got to avoid the mistakes, got to avoid losing in 1v1s, got to avoid mistakes on set pieces, on dead ball situations. That's what it's going to take for this team to get results right now.
All right, finally, before we let you go, as we're wrapping up our conversation with Atlanta United analyst Jason Longshore, who will be on the call tonight with our buddy Mike Conti. Jason and Mike always with the call, and Garrett and a special guest, Joe Patrick, filling in for Abe Gordon. We'll have the pregame starting at 6:30. What can we expect tonight? What is the strategy? What is the game plan?
Montreal's missing some players with Canada, with their national team. They're playing inexplicably a third-place game in the Copa America. I guess CONMEBOL needed another gate to make some more money on the tournament, because a third-place game in a tournament like this is crazy, and I'm sure that CF Montreal is not happy about it. So missing three guys, missing three starters. Yes, take advantage. That talent gap is not what it could have been. So take advantage. I think the teams are going to be in really similar shapes, so they're going to cancel each other out in some ways tactically. How do you make up the ground for that? And I think you've got to get Daniel Rios fed early. He's been very, very good for this team as of late. He's scoring goals. He's creating goals. Feed him. Force the ball to him, get the ball wide, put in crosses, look for him, get him going early on, because he's the kind of player that it's not just about him finding the back of the net. He can open the game up for others as well, as we've seen with the little back heels and flicks and getting assists. Feed him in the first half, especially early. Make Montreal kind of collapse on him a little bit. That can create some space for others.
All right, Jason, appreciate the time. As always, enjoy the nice weather up there before you come back home to the swamp. That is Atlanta, my friend.
Appreciate it. Have a good one.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.